Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Kieser here with you on this Wednesday morning, taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We're going to get to our greatest living baseball player discussion. Willie Mays passing away at the age of 93 last night, obviously a legend. Also, PK's got a mini baseball rant a little bit later in this hour, too, that we'll get to as well.
Yeah, so we were talking about just the phone interference as an audience member at a game or a concert and stuff, which leads me to this on the phone distraction level. I've just recently completed two series on TV, one Under the Bridge, I think was Hulu, and The Veil, which is an FX thing that was on Hulu. Both were good, but I found the last episodes disappointing.
Okay.
Under the Bridge, based on a true story, but a little bit fictionalized. And so last night, the last episode of The Veil, probably including the commercials, because Hulu has commercials built in, was an hour and 8 minutes. And so I was like, oh, this is good. It's almost a movie. And it was kind of long and drawn out. And I end up on my damn phone. Like, I'm a little bit bored by it.
Yep.
And I wind up on my phone.
Yeah.
And so in my reels, I'm scrolling reels a lot when I'm on my phone. And three of the advertisements that come up pretty regularly on my reels now are for phone detox programs.
Yeah.
Which I have been clicking on, so they're coming up more frequent. And I'm thinking about buying one of these phone detox programs.
Yeah.
One of which seems weird. It like matches you with some, like after you take the survey, it matches you with some like famous person to like line you up with their habits,
okay.
Which seems kind of weird.
It does.
But the other, like it says, like I think it's this guy, Simon Sinek. I don't know his last name, but I've seen him on Reels, and he speaks very well. He's kind of a business-sided guy, but it's practical advice for everyone. And he says, if you're out to dinner with your friends and you're on your phone texting somebody else, you've got a real problem.
Yeah.
And I think to myself, not only do I do that, but
everyone.
I think everybody I know
yes.
does that. And yes, that is a real problem.
Yeah.
So even if this is $65, I think I probably ought to sign up for this thing. I don't put the phone down.
It is. I was trying to think about the other day, life before the smartphone, because you know my generation,
it's kind of unimaginable.
It really is. Like you know my generation, we had that growing up, but we're kind of like the last ones going up through school. Like the smartphone came around when I was a senior in high school, so I my entire life before that I knew. You know, we had cell phones, but we weren't just obsessed over it left and right. You know, we were sitting there last night at dinner, and my daughter, who's almost 11 months old, she's playing with, you know, the menu and toys and stuff like that. I looked up, wife's on the phone. I look down, I'm on the phone. I'm like, what are we doing? Like, why is this just our go-to thing? When I have nothing to look at or do, it immediately goes to the phone. It's a constant thing every day.
Masters of addiction.
Yeah.
I mean, the Surgeon General legitimately is saying that you put warning labels on social media for kids.
Yeah.
Which is you know, it's a problem. And I think everybody knows it's a problem.
Yeah.
But until we all together say it's a problem and we need to do something about it, we're not going to do something about it. And while it's a problem, it's a very enjoyable problem.
It is. It is.
I mean, they got the dopamine thing going on. So I don't know. But I'm thinking about signing up for one of these things, and then maybe I'll become a disciple and spread the word because I don't know. But, I mean, you're talking about it coming of age when you were in high school or whatever. I went to college without email.
Yeah.
So, like, we got a fancy voicemail system when I was in college. That was a big deal. And everything was fine. Everything was fine.
That's
so I look back and say, how did I live without it? I mean, I had a great high school and college experience yeah. without email.
Yeah. And we're talking email. That's crazy. I mean, it's sometimes I fear for the world that my daughter is coming up in. We're going to get to the best baseball player discussion here in just a second. Willie Mays passing away at 93 years old. So lay the groundwork, PK, for what we're looking for here with the best living baseball player discussion and how this kind of comes off the passing of Willie Mays.
Well, here, I'm not positive this is the origin story. But best living ball player in my lifetime has always been a thing. And I think it might come from Joe DiMaggio, who had an ego such that he insisted on being introduced as the greatest living ball player. He was introduced at Yankee Stadium as the greatest living ball player. And some people were put, and so when he died, then there was debate, and Ted Williams kind of became introduced or widely held as the greatest living ball player. And then when he died, Willie Mays became the greatest living ball player. Then a lot of people said Willie Mays was the greatest living ball player when DiMaggio and Williams were alive. And I could see that argument from a five-tool guy. DiMaggio certainly had, you know, championships and Marilyn Monroe as a wife and maybe a more glamorous story. But I'm finding, as it was one of the first things I thought about last night, and I'm just having difficulty looking at a kind of a gap here. Willie Mays' last season, and Willie Mays was very bad at the end, but Willie Mays' last season was 1973.
Yep.
And the guys you're now looking at candidates for this, I would think Barry Bonds is one of the top ones, no matter how you feel about the steroid stuff. He didn't start playing until 1986.
Yep.
So there's like a 13-year gap. Where are the people that started playing, you know, late 60s, early 70s, yep, late 70s? Like, who's that?
Yeah.
Now, I started, you know, I just went to Baseball Reference and looked at the wins above replacement guys. And so based on that, the candidates are Barry Bonds, who's by far the best WAR of living guys, 162.8. Roger Clemens, another steroid guy, 139.2. A-Rod, another one, 117.6. Ricky Henderson, 111.1. Tom Seaver, 109.9. Mike Schmidt, 106.9. Greg Maddux, 106.6. Albert Pujols, 101.4, and Randy Johnson, 101.1. Those are the only guys. Those are the only guys over 100. And I'm not giving it to a pitcher. I just think it's an everyday player thing, if you're saying greatest living ball player. Now, we could do a greatest living pitcher thing, sure, and that would be maybe just as interesting a conversation. But I think it's hard not to say Bonds. But then you'd have to go, and I need a five-tool guy, right? And Bonds, especially early in his career, stole certainly bases,
yep,
had a good arm. Later in his career, maybe not such a great defensive player. But we know he had kind of two stages of his career. You could even look at pre- and post-Pittsburgh. But maybe we're missing somebody who was – in that started his career in that era we're talking about. I don't know. I'm suspecting you're going to bring up Griffey here.
Yep. I'm a big Griffey guy. Griffey is on my list for sure. I mean, there are people that would say Trout, and he's still playing right now in terms of five tool. I mean, I'm looking at wins above replacement.
86.2. So 50th, but he's still got years ahead of him.
Still got years ahead of him. I mean, you could make an argument for him, although he's never won anything. You know, Ken Griffey Jr. was just electric. And for people my age, which is early 30s, I mean, he was a big part of baseball in the 90s. So that would probably be my answer. Let's go to our 102.5 The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Welcome in Bob. Bob, good morning. Thanks for calling in.
Hey, fellas. Appreciate you taking my call. I got to go with you. As far as the sweetest swing I have ever seen in my life, it was Ken Griffey Jr. I always thought he should be an MLB logo like Jerry West was for the NBA. Now, the greatest living ball player, in my humble opinion, that covered every facet that I could think of, has to be Derek Jeter. He was a leader, hence his nickname, the captain. He has huge highlights, great defense, great offense, and results coming from that. He has the rings, humility. Never, you didn't, unless he was playing, never really heard from the guy. You know, he was just, like I said, just, you know, and I'm a kid that grew up in the 70s, saw them all. But I gotta go with Jeter, even over Reggie Jackson, because the only thing that I didn't like about Reggie was he had that "I'm the straw that stirs the drink" attitude, and it rubs me wrong.
Yep, thanks for the call,
well,
Bob.
I don't think Reggie Jackson was a good enough defender to be in the conversation. Derek Jeter's 95th in WAR, 71.3. Purists are going to crush the idea because he made good defensive plays, but he didn't have great range, and he's viewed as really not a good defensive player. Though he made clutch defensive plays, yep. He went over the railing and cut his nose. He made that play against the A's with the double cutoff against Jeremy Giambi. That's a terrific, terrific play. I mean, he certainly – he captained New York Yankees team that was a dynasty, that was tremendous. But I love the guy. But I think it's a stretch to put him there based on what analytics show were his deficiencies.
We'll take more of your thoughts on this. 615-737-1025. The greatest living baseball player, who would that be for you? 615-737-1025. More on that coming up next. We got a baseball rant from PK coming up later this hour as well. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road, broadcasting live from our Busy Bee Plumbing, Heating, and Air Conditioning Game Nashville studios, home of the $99 yearly Beehive membership, where the buzz is always about great service. Taking your thoughts on the greatest living ball player on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. We got a lot coming in, PK. There's votes for Cal Ripken Jr. There's votes for Griffey.
Could certainly make a case for Ripken. He's 34th in wins above replacement.
There's votes for Nolan Ryan. There's votes for – we got one for Ichiro on the text line. And there's – and this one I did think about, and his career still got a lot left to be figured out about it. But when you just turn – in terms of five-tool player, but also when he's able to do so and is completely healthy, really good pitcher, really good hitter, Shohei Ohtani, and what he does.
I think
what
in time – yes, not now. And in terms of who would you say before that?
Ichiro. I had a vote for Ichiro on the text line.
No, after that.
Who did I say? Let me go find it.
Sorry.
No, you're good. Chipper? No,
Chipper is definitely not.
A lot of votes for Chipper on the text line.
That's Braves fans being Braves fans. You can pull
George
back.
Brett, Pete Rose.
Go to 30,000 feet. You can make a case for Rose. there was one there. Oh, Nolan Ryan.
Nolan Ryan, yep.
See, we're talking five-tool players, and Nolan Ryan, look, you can't not respect Nolan Ryan, but Nolan Ryan's a one-tool player. I mean, he had a supernatural fastball.
Yep.
Now, it's the best fastball in history, maybe, with Randy Johnson, but can the greatest living player – be a guy who simply had an otherworldly arm? It was put together by God in an amazing way and threw harder, longer than anybody else. Also walked a lot of people. To me, he's out of consideration.
I think it's got to be somebody who plays every day.
I do too. But even on the pitcher list, I wouldn't put Nolan Ryan particularly high.
I mean, Clemens is unbelievably high.
Seaver, Maddox, Johnson. I think all, to me, ahead of Nolan Ryan.
Yep. I mean, it was interesting. So people are asking, like, where Ken Griffey is on wins above replacement. He's 58th. So he's 58th at 83.8. So, I mean, Trout's ahead of him at this point. You know, Adrian Beltre is ahead of him.
Adrian Beltre is really good. I mean, he's not a candidate for this, but he is a player who is not talked about enough as being an all-time great player.
What do you make of the A-Rod part? I mean, you watched a lot of A-Rod, and there's the performance enhancing stuff around him too in that era. But WAR at 117.6,
16th overall. I can't get past the personality part. It's hard for me. But I mean, he needs to be in the conversation as well. But it's really hard. If you're eliminating steroids, it's hard for it not to be Bonds. Bonds has a better WAR than Willie Mays.
Yeah.
The list is Ruth, who's head and shoulders the best, Walter Johnson, Cy Young, and Barry Bonds ahead of Willie Mays and Ty Cobb and Hank Aaron.
Yeah.
So, you know, and if you're talking tools, I mean, Bonds doesn't have all of that on the home runs and the walks. You know, he ran, he threw. I don't like the guy, and I don't like what he did. But again, this conversation has occurred before. He had probably a Hall of Fame career before he went to San Francisco. You could split him in half. And so I think you can make a case for a lot of people now. It's not maybe because of the steroids as clear-cut as it was for Mays.
Is Bonds your guy? Bonds your answer?
Bonds is my answer. Here's another interesting thing. For a long time, the answer was Ted Williams. He's 14th on this list. And for a long time before that, it was DiMaggio, and I'm scrolling to find DiMaggio.
Yeah. I haven't seen him. There's a couple votes for Johnny Bench on the text line, too.
Joe DiMaggio is 69.
79.1.
He did a hell of a marketing job for himself. He really did.
Pete Rose is 67.
By the way, Pete Rose is a little bit one note. I mean, I guess he stole some bases. His on-base percentage was ridiculous. But he was a singles hitter. So his slugging percentage isn't there, right? He's a little one note for me. A tremendous player, obviously.
By the way, real quickly on your Joe DiMaggio story on the greatest living ball player, apparently, and this is from Wikipedia, so I need to find an actual source, but apparently he punched Billy Crystal in the stomach for not introducing him as the greatest living ball player at an event one time.
That's amazing.
You didn't call me the greatest living ball player and just punches someone
in the
stomach. By
the way, Greg Nettles, 124th all time.
It's pretty good.
67.9.
Yeah.
He's better than Ernie Banks. He's better than Don Sutton. He's better than Duke Snyder.
Yeah.
He's better than Andre Dawson. I'm listing Hall of Famers here.
I got somebody
that's better than Jackie Robinson.
That's right. All those great pitchers and no love for Pedro Martinez. Crazy fastball, unhittable changeup. I mean, Pedro, I think, is pretty high on the list here in terms of wins above replacement. He is. Let's see here.
I saw a lot of fun. This is a very good list to play with. My answer is Bonds. And you're going Griffey?
I'm going Griffey, but that's probably a little personal bias. I mean, when you really look at it, Bonds is probably the real answer. I mean, like, you know, Pujols is high on the list. Pujols, I never thought of Pujols, though, as like a great, great defender. You know what I mean? Like, you know, he's a great player.
Tremendous hitter.
Yeah. But I never thought of him as like just some elite defender.
But yeah, I think he's comes up a little bit short there.
I mean, you can make the. I mean, Trout, other than being stuck with the Angels, pretty darn good.
Well, so after Bonds and A-Rod, in terms of position players, the first clean, quote unquote, clean guy on the WAR list is Rickey Henderson.
Yep.
What do we think of Rickey Henderson?
Yeah, I mean, what's he at? 111.1. So he's number 19 overall on the list, just slotting in behind Lou Gehrig.
I tell you who likes Rickey Henderson for this.
Ricky Henderson, yes. I'm sure he does. By the way, I had somebody ask about Maddux. Maddux is 28th on WAR, 106.6.
Now, he'd be a very strong candidate for me on the pitching list.
Because William from Dover called him the Peyton Manning of baseball. Not the most physically gifted, but the best at honing his craft.
Oh, I totally agree. I mean, Greg Maddux was a terrific, terrific player, and he was fun to watch in a way that, I mean, he had a share of strikeouts, but he wasn't blowing people away by any means. I think Ricky Henderson probably we undervalue because his super skill was speed, not power. I mean, he'll hit some home runs for you, but that's not why he's up on the leaderboard. And we tend to devalue speed. I definitely devalue speed. And speed has been really devalued in the modern game, right? We don't care about a stolen base anymore, even though the Red Sox stole 9 bases on the Yankees on Sunday.
Dwight on the text line says, mine is Bobby Bonilla because he's still being paid.
Still being paid.
He gets paid through July 1st of 2035. About $1.2 million per year.
Remarkable contractual achievement.
615-737-1025. We'll continue to take your submissions for the greatest living ball player. A baseball rant coming up next from PK, something that set him off last night. We'll get into that next. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, the game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Keyser here with you on this Wednesday morning. Joe, 1025 the game, and myself this Saturday from 10 to noon at the Coleman Tractor at 3613 Highway 31 West in White House for the Orange Day sales event. There will be free lunch from 11 to 1, catered by Keys Southern Smokehouse, live music, drive or ride demos, door prizes, and you can enter to win an Echo battery-powered weed trimmer kit as well. Plus, check out all the one-day deals, including 10% off on all parts department purchase. Event runs from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m. this Saturday. Coleman Tractor Company, 3613 Highway 31 West in White House. Looking forward to seeing you there coming up on Saturday. PK, you were watching some baseball last night, and it reignited, or maybe for the first time ignited, a rant in your mind about what we saw. Set up for us what happened last night and why it made you so upset.
Yeah, so Yanks-Orioles, a pretty good matchup. Orioles, very good. Yanks, better. But big games for AL East. And Orioles throw high and tight to Aaron Judge, who's having another fantastic year. Hits him on his low hand, like above the pinky on the meaty part of the hand. Now, this is, on Sunday, Mookie Betts got hit in similar fashion. He's going to miss like 6 or 8 weeks. He cracked his hand. So immediately you're thinking, oh my God, you know, that's a bad place to get hit. You're defenseless there. Some guys wear gloves with some padding there, but how much is a pad? You know, it's a 96, 98 mile an hour fastball. Judge is wincing pretty good. He kind of walked towards first very slowly, very deep into the infield grass. Like, clearly expressing disdain at the pitcher. Stayed in the game for a little while, but ultimately was removed. And a little while later, Gleyber Torres got hit in a similar fashion. He stayed in the game, but also got hit in the hand. I think it tends to be overly reactive if you immediately throw. I don't think it was the same pitcher. I don't know. It's overly reactive to me if the ump automatically throws the guy out when the second guy is hit. But you know if the Yankees then hit somebody, he's automatically going to get tossed. It's a close game. It winds up a 4-2 Yankee win. You don't want to give up an automatic base runner there. But I'm dying for Nestor Cortez to drill somebody in the ribs. Now, is that too old school of me? Is the umpiring too harsh there? I think the Yankees should get a shot there at saying, hey, you're hitting our guys.
Yep.
You potentially knocked out our star for 6 weeks. If you're going to be inside, you got to be more careful than that. It's clearly not intentional. But here's an intentional one in the ribs to give you a message. Verdugo, you could read his lips. He said
he's very upset.
He said, I think to the pitcher, I'm going to blank you up.
Yep.
And when I'm done with you, I'm going to blank him up. Just some good chirping over the rim.
We need more of that.
But so how has baseball evolved to this point in terms of the retaliatory hitting a guy?
Yeah.
And how is that umpired now? Like, if Cortez hit him, and Cortez might have been near the end of his time in this game, But he's automatically tossed. He's probably suspended. So it not only hurts you in this game, but it hurts you in another game. It probably ignites a fight where other guys then are going to wind up suspended.
Yep.
Fortunately, Judge x-rays and MRI come back negative, so he could be in the lineup today. You know, it's just a matter of swelling. But that's very close to a big thing that not just I'm not being a Yankee whiner. I am being a Yankee whiner, but, you know, how bad is it for baseball if in the span of Sunday to Tuesday you lose Mookie Betts and Aaron Judge for 6 weeks each?
Not good.
And you know, should there be room for the Yankees to hit somebody to send a message back?
So I think so. I mean, it used to be
tit for tat.
Automatic, right? Like that's what happened. This is an interesting discussion because I think some of the quote unquote unwritten rules in baseball are so stupid. Like when people get mad for a bat flip or somebody kind of showboating a home run a little bit, I think it's the dumbest thing. It bothers me when teams go crazy about that and they either throw at the next guy or they just start whining about it and yelling in the dugout for somebody doing that. I remember when Bautista hit that bomb in the playoffs. That guy's probably been 10 years ago now for the Blue Jays, and they were just going nuts after that. I do think though, like there is that's part of the game. Like we used to even in high school, like when we played.
I love this.
We had a signal. It was the middle finger. Like our signal was the middle finger, and that meant from the coach. Yep, throw at him. And that was either because they were throwing at us or the coach was running his mouth or something, or the kid inside the dugout was running his mouth. But that was, I mean, we were talking high school and we were throwing at a kid. So, you know, you don't want to see 96, 97, 98 miles an hour of a fastball at people's head. Like I think when people throw it at somebody's head, then you're crossing a line there. These are major league pitchers. You throw it at the rib cage, you throw it at the shoulder, you
throw
it at
their ass.
Yeah, like it's
or their thigh.
And they can control that. So I don't have any problem after Judge takes one inside, intentional or not, for the Yankees if they would have responded to that, which by the way they did not. But
and there was a second
no
one. And yeah. There was a second.
That's the thing.
And so they were kind of saying, like the broadcasters, I thought, and David Cohn was in there, like. If you can't control throwing inside there, you got to back off.
Yeah.
Like as a responsibility thing. So I was pissed. And I would have liked to have seen them tag somebody to see how it unfolded. Because a automatic ejection there, then, you know, that's like the second guy in a fight. And the second guy in a fight, you know, the second guy in a fight gets tossed.
Yep.
But then justice isn't served. And I wonder if it's over. That was the first game of, I think, a three-game set. So maybe there's something
maybe
left. Now maybe it's done because Judge isn't hurt.
Right.
But if Judge was out for 8 weeks.
Then it may not be done. Yeah.
It might not be done today, and it might not be done for the rest of the season series.
Do you think baseball?
And I think bad blood out of that, by the way, is good.
I do too.
There's not enough of that.
That's what
anymore.
I do. I think all that's good. Do you think baseball is too concerned about preventing some of that? Because clearly they've tried to minimize that as much as they can over the last 10 years or so.
Yeah, definitely too concerned. Definitely too friendly. You know, Yanks just played the Red Sox over the weekend. And the Red Sox aren't very good record-wise right now, aren't very good talent-wise. They played a good series against the Yanks, took two out of three, ran on them, and made them look foolish in some sense. But the Yankees broadcast was showing fights from the old days. You know, Nettles was in the middle of that.
Yeah.
You know. But those guys hated each other and fought. And then the Pedro Martinez, Don Zimmer stuff, you know, that wasn't that long ago. No. That's not ancient history. Hated each other, and there's a lot of emotion between. There's nothing between those teams now. And right now, fortunately for me, the pendulum has swung in a direction where the Yanks are very good and the Red Sox are very mediocre. But there's no charge between those teams. Like, who are rivalries and anger between guys are down across the board. I don't know
in
about
all sports.
In the NBA.
Yeah.
But I think you miss that. You want some hatred. Now, it's okay if you shake hands at the end of a Stanley Cup series. That's great. But it's better when you're shaking hands after you really developed some animosity over the course of the seven games. I don't know. How are the Panthers and Oilers getting along?
I mean, it's gotten progressively more feisty as the series has gone on, but it's not. I mean, it's not like it used to be. It's more of a
business
of a skill game.
Business relationship.
You don't want to swing too far to the other side either. Like, you don't want bench clearing brawls every night in Major League Baseball,
and
you don't want people charging the mound all the time. But I don't think you need to totally abandon it either, right? Like, that's baseball, from my perspective, still is having a challenging time attracting people my age and younger to the game. Like, they need people my age and younger buying into baseball. And they've tried to fix some things with pace of play, which I think was probably the biggest thing, that they've tried to get better in that area. But I still think, like, rivalries in sports are a good thing, and it feels like that's falling more and more by the wayside every year.
I think it applies to football, too. Yep. Like, when you see guys congregating pregame, that's kind of weak.
Yep.
Like, after the game, like the handshake line in hockey, that's fine. But the pregame get-together, I think that bugs me a little bit. Because when the fans hate each other more than the players, it's bothersome. And I understand you went to college together and everything, but
yep.
You gotta. And I'm not asking for wrestling fakery, but there needs to be some level of, you know, and you're going to protect each other. You don't want to hurt each other and everything. But when the venom does rise, and that's, you know, an AFC North thing. That's a good Hard Knocks element
it
to
is.
Them being on the last 6 weeks of the season, because the Ravens and the Steelers don't like each other in that way. There is a real rivalry there. And I think there are some in football. In your division, the Packers have some, you know, losing to the Lions is a big hurtful deal that extends beyond the fans.
No doubt about it.
But those are going away pretty regularly. Yankees, Red Sox doesn't
it's
have
not what it used to be.
The feel.
Kevin in Nashville says, Rizzo Judge stands so inside that those pitches are not that far off the plate.
Rizzo is a pro at getting
Rizzo
hit.
Does,
he takes pride in it like Don Baylor did. But Judge ain't looking to get hit.
No, he's not. He's looking to hit the ball.
Certainly not in the hand.
490 feet the other way. 615-737-1025. More of your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Also get to Tennessee and Florida State coming up later today. Tennessee with an opportunity to punch their ticket to the College World Series final. Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. Final segment of the day, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063 the game. Robbie Stanley, Paul Kuharski, Nick Keys are here with you on this Wednesday morning. Taking your thoughts on our phone and text lines, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. I got a texter that says the Eddie George-Ray Lewis rivalry was elite. That's what we need to get back to across all sports.
Yeah.
Certainly remember that one.
And they're friends now.
Yep.
You know, and they became friends through that process. That's fine, you know, but it was nasty during.
Yeah. They were not friends during the time. I mean, I could still see that collision between those two. I guess it would have been 03, 04 when they were in Baltimore for the playoff game when Gary Anderson hit the game winner. But those two meeting on the sideline there was awesome.
Right. And for Titans fans, there's a real hatred of the Ravens.
Yep.
But for Titans players now, there's nothing. Like we, the media, inform them.
Yeah.
Hey, you guys know the history of you and the Ravens? Or Vrabel might have shown them,
right?
You know, and educated them on it. Coaches will tell a team about that history. And part of that's like the times, right?
Yeah.
You know, kids now don't know about stuff like that. But does that charge some of these guys up and say, hey, we're supposed to hate these guys, or there's really something here? I don't think it resonates.
Well,
part of that's cultural or the sign of the time.
And I don't know if it's ever going back to the way it used to be. And this is probably more of a basketball thing than it is anything else, because football is different. I mean, you're growing up around the country. It's not like there's, you know, AAU football leagues. But a lot of the basketball guys, even before they get to the NBA,
played together. Yeah.
So, like, there's not really that natural built-in hatred. Like, I'm trying to even think of a rivalry, like Draymond Green pisses people off, but there's not really a an instigator, a rival, like there used to be back in the basketball day. Like football's a contact sport and a violent contact sport. So there's always going to be some of that, I think, naturally, just based on how you have to be to play the game.
There's a violence, too.
Right.
But like when one of the best players of all time in LeBron James has played for how many franchises?
This would be three.
Three.
Yep.
You know, he's played with a lot of, you know, it's not like a Magic Bird thing where you're entrenched with your team for 15 years and there's a massive identity thing there where you are purple, where you are green, and anything that's not is your enemy to some degree.
Well, I thought in the NFL, and maybe we still are to a certain degree, I thought we might be getting there, and it wasn't, you know, the physicality of it wasn't comparable to some of these rivalries back in the day. But, you know, Cincinnati and Kansas City meeting in the playoffs pretty much every year. I thought we were kind of heading towards that. And then, you know, Burrow gets hurt last year and they don't play in the playoffs. But, like, even that rivalry in the NFL, like, there's divisional rivalries that are really, really good. But, like, a Titans-Ravens-esque rivalry of just the physicality of it. With the rules today, it's harder to do that too. Like, go back and watch some of those games. Like, half of the hits that Ray Lewis is laying out there, you're not even allowed to do anymore in today's game.
I also think it's more of a job. It's more of a profession, right? So Tom Brady is more of a it made him great. He's more of a briefcase guy. Peyton Manning too, right? They're more briefcase guys, and they're looking at the film and stuff. And is it emotional? Yeah, but they don't. They're keeping their emotions in check is a big part of the job to be successful professionals. And when you're keeping your emotions in check, you're not getting worked up over some rivalry.
Yeah.
That's noise. That's noise that gets in the way. And they don't want to let noise get in the way. Now, we want to see some noise get in the way. We want to see somebody get in your head. But that's a fan-sided thing to it, not a on-the-field side of it.
PK, Tennessee in action today in the College World Series. So they were awaiting the winner of Florida State and North Carolina. Florida State wins yesterday and wins in pretty convincing fashion.
Looked
they hang
good.
Up 9 runs. They beat North Carolina 9-5. And you're talking about a team that can hit the ball really, really well. They played Tennessee already in this tournament. A wild 12-11 win for Tennessee. So a lineup that has already gotten to the Vols one time in this tournament. All Tennessee's got to do is win. So they've got two cracks at it. Today, if they lose today, they'll have Florida State again tomorrow. And that would mean Florida State will have played Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday after having played over the weekend too. So you would have to think Tennessee's got a pretty big advantage heading into this one from a pitching standpoint because of the energy that Florida State has had to expend the last few days here. But if you're a Vols fan, I think heading into yesterday, you would have probably preferred to see North Carolina because Florida State's lineup's a little bit more dangerous. But a big opportunity for Tennessee and Tony Vitello to punch their ticket tonight. And if they can do it, you're talking about an appearance in the national title series, a fan base that's been starved for a championship of some kind. And to your question yesterday when we were talking about Gentry Estes, if they're able to finish this thing off here and they win – what an elevator for Tony Vitello and that program it'll be.
Yeah, and for Tennessee, generally speaking, to get a national championship in a sport that's grown in importance and relevance, not just at Tennessee, but nationally. The other thing, about the pitching thing, you know, you always feel you'd rather be in Tennessee's spot, right, rested and with your pitching lined up. But in baseball, there's always this thing where, hey, Florida State played and played well yesterday while Tennessee was sitting around.
Yep.
I'm sure they had a light workout and all of that. But the thing about baseball is you never know. You know, that playing yesterday might be the better scenario.
Oh, and if you lose today, then the pressure shifts totally to Tennessee, right?
Yeah.
Like, I mean, not that there's no pressure on Florida State, but Tennessee is the number one overall seed. If you lose today, then there's a lot of noise heading into tomorrow's game.
So and then again, you're an elimination.
You're an elimination scenario, game,
and then anything can happen.
And you give Florida State some life, and maybe some guys. I mean, look, you know, you got to be cognizant of people's arms, and you, again, you'd rather be in Tennessee's scenario from a pitching standpoint, but guys will give it a go in on Thursday that are on the border of being ready or not. I mean, they'll give you an inning. If they normally give you four, they'll at least try to give you two or three on Thursday.
So you're playing some golf tomorrow afternoon.
Playing a little golf. 615 Open coming up tomorrow. Playing some golf. Rex Road won't get out there. Like, he will not play golf.
That's ridiculous.
I don't really understand.
I would have played, but I've been watching a lot of golf on my reels.
Yeah, me too.
A lot of tips. So I feel like my game's in good shape. I feel like not having swung a club.
Well, the last time we talked about this, you had just played somewhere, and you played well.
I had a terrific short game in the last scramble I was in, but I think that was last spring.
It was.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the style. Once a year, you get out there, and you just keep honing that short game.
Well, I will be out there tomorrow and do 2 hours in the afternoon on this fine station with Mr. Rex Road.
You will.
So we will be making fun of all of you who are trudging by at the turn and the like. I've enjoyed these last two mornings.
Always
appreciate the invitation. And I look forward to reconnecting with Rex Road tomorrow. I think he's got meetings with the Athletic today.
I believe so.
So hopefully he comes back in a good mood, but who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows what the Athletic's up to? We should probably send a check-in text.
We probably
could. Wellness, wellness check-in.
Everything going okay up there, Joe?
Yeah.
Let's see. Have you seen Chase McCabe attempt to do anything of athletic valor? Have you seen him try to swing
it? I have not, but I think I've heard some stories.
It's a beautiful sight. I'm looking forward to it tomorrow. You playing, Chase?
He's playing.
That's thumbs up.
There goes my chance at a meeting with Chase.
615-737-1025. Our phone number will have you covered all day long here on the show. PK, thanks for being in the last couple of days.
Don't block the box. Be sure to lock your locks.
PK back tomorrow afternoon with Rex Road. I'll be back in the morning with Rex Road. He's pulling double duty tomorrow. Chase and Big Joe up next. You're listening to 1025-1063 The Game.
See ya.